and welcome back to What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
It is you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I am so good. I'm so happy to be recording with you today. I'm happy to be talking about this great book with you today.
I'm just gonna do my same caveat, because we are recording on the same day as the cat person episode. So I'm not in my home. I'm on the edge of Epping Forest with my beautiful in-laws' dogs. So there might be some dog action. In the last episode, one licked my foot. I don't know if that ended up in the final cut, but it was alarming. You might hear some sighing, some paws on, you know, on tile, that kind of thing. So I do apologize in advance if we have any canine disruptions.
It's just because he was mad that it was about cat person, not dog person.
He was incensed. And he wanted his opinion known.
Right. What are we talking about today, my friend?
Well, we're just going to dive right in, as the YouTubers say, to The Service by Frankie Mirren.
Yes, we are.
Which is a stone cold banger, and we were really excited to talk about, so we decided to just do a deep dive.
We're going deep. And we are basically advocating that you buy this book, and then you read this book, and then you talk to us about this book. That is the project of this episode, in my opinion.
Agreed. And like our other book club episodes, we're not going to spoil the ending, but we are going to be talking about a lot of the content of the book. So, you know, maybe you don't care and you'll listen anyway, but if you're planning on reading the book, I do recommend just holding fire, read the book first, and then come back to this episode.
So true.
All right, let's go. So first of all, do you want to just nutshell the book for us?
Sure.
I like a nutshell. I like to kick off with a nutshell.
So in a nutshell, The Service is the story of three women. Two of them are sex workers. One is called Freya, and she is kind of younger, edgy white girl, university student kind of vibes. Laurie, who is a little bit older, she's a mom, she is mixed race, and she works from a flat in Paddington. And then the third person that it follows is a white lady, middle-aged journalist called Paula, who is a bit obsessed with crusading against the opening of sex robot parlors in Soho in London. And it's about how their three lives overlap, how they live their lives, you know, the two sex workers, the effects of anti-sex worker legislation on them, and how Paula is kind of complicit in that. Would you say that's a fair nutshell?
I think that's a banging nutshell.
Cool.
What I found really interesting about... Can we start with Paula? I feel like, yes, Paula's an interesting place to start. She was my least favourite character. You know, like, because obviously, like, our values don't match. She mirrors a lot of journalists that, you know, we come into contact with online whose work I don't respect. But she is so fucking well written.
It's so empathetic. I actually
found, as I was reading, I was, like, marking little passages I wanted to talk about. And Paula by far ended up with the most tabs, just because everything, she is so carefully crafted. Like, I think it would be so easy to have created a kind of silly, like, straw man in Paula, you know, to, like, just pour everything that's wrong with UK journalism and the kind of swerfism of feminism into this character as, like, a caricature. But Frankie Mirren does not do that, and she's ended up creating this really kind of interesting person to drive that aspect of the narrative.
It's definitely one of the most nuanced and empathetic portrayals of a middle-aged white lady columnist type that I could imagine reading.
Yeah, and like, she just, really takes the time to develop why Paula feels the way she feels, you know, and like, even when she's doing quite horrendous things, like she has a dinner party, like she's rubbing shoulders with anti-abortionists because they have this shared goal. And TERFs as well. There's someone wearing an adult human female t-shirt at a protest. And like, Frankie Mirren really takes the time to rationalize like Paula's thinking. So you can really see how she has ended up thinking it's a good idea to give these fucking scumbags her time.
Mm.
And she really kind of drills into Paula feeling, like, the fact that Paula feels silenced even though she's a fucking journalist. like, there's this great line about when she's talking to her children and she discovers her teenage daughter is listening to The Cure. And Paula's like, oh, cool, this is something that we're going to bond over. And her daughter has absolutely no interest in her mother's opinion on this band. She doesn't give a fuck that her mom used to listen to them. She cannot imagine her mother as a young woman. And Paula says, it's the younger generation alone who interpret the world correctly, who see things as they really are. And, like, I really liked that line, you know, like, as this, like, middle-aged woman's kind of perspective of her opinion becoming less valued and valid. And it really made me think of social media and how these people behave on social media. You know, that, like, they really do think that their perspective is this adult, sensible perspective, regardless of the ages of the people who disagree with them.
So true.
And then, yeah, there's also a bit about talking about the kind of anti-abortionists and the TERFs and things. There's a great line about the echo chamber as well. And she kind of, do you remember the scene at the dinner party?
Yeah, yeah. Where she goes for really a meeting trying... with this
yeah.
MP and... Is it an MP and the head of a kind of campaigning group? But yeah, I know which scene you mean, the dinner party.
And she's basically just trying to convince herself that she's having a good time. And she's like, they're kind of hashing out their political opinion and like where they're kind of, where they're coming from. And her husband is clearly hating it. And she's like, it's nice to have friends with different opinions. It's fun. And it's clearly fucking horrendous.
Yeah, like the experience itself is an unpleasant experience, but she's still trying to desperately cling on to the idea that there is something good in it, there is something useful in it. And it's like, well, no, actually, like, if you are having a horrible time, if you are identifying that these people are horrible, if you are not, like, learning anything from them, like, maybe it is just bad.
And it, like, that moment as well, you kind of see the cognitive dissonance in action, you know, like, you can see how strongly they feel about controlling women's bodies with the anti-abortion rhetoric that they believe in. But at the same time, they have a nanny, and there's this kind of parallel made about, like, how they treat their nanny, you know, that they're like, oh no, she likes it. Like, she loves our children. She loves spending time with us. We don't like to think of it as a job. Like, they really have this very kind of bizarre view that this woman in their employment is somehow a member of the family, but actually she has to eat her dinner in her bedroom alone. And like, the whole scene is just really fucking uncomfortable. And you can see Paula, her brain is like working, but she's not quite prepared to make connections that would then lead her down a path of maybe rethinking her stance on sex work. So I really enjoyed the depiction of Paula, even though I found her infuriating for all of the, you know, the empathy. She still has a savior complex. Like, she's a SWERF. As we said, like, she rubs shoulders with these horrendous people. Her idea of, like, saving, there's a raid that Laurie and one of the many people that she works with in this flat, they get caught up in. And, you know, this idea of saving Laurie and her friend Yuli is Yuli being sent to Jarl's Wood, which Paula has absolutely no political thoughts on whatsoever. She's just, like, saved.
But what I thought was the most interesting about that dynamic was when Paula believed that she was saving Laurie, who to her mind was a kind of naive, helpless girl caught up in the, like, the horrible sex industry. That was her motivator. But as soon as she found a way that she could cast Laurie as a pimp, she then became the target of Paula's rage and, like, her, I don't know how to describe it, but yeah, she then became, like, the enemy rather than the person that Paula wanted to help. And I think that that is really interesting in the context of how we construct, like, what is a brothel, what is brothel keeping, what are laws, you know. It's about yeah, I think it was quite interesting reading that from the perspective of, like, people who are very interested in what the law is rather than, like, what ethically is right or wrong. Because yeah, to her, like, if Laurie is technically a brothel keeper because she hires this flat in Paddington that she and her friend Yuli work from, then she is a pimp and they are the worst. They're like the scum of the earth. That's everything that Paula is against. And therefore she deserves, like, all of Paula's animosity, all of her kind of journalistic might being thrown against her. Whereas she was perfectly happy to believe that she was rescuing this, like, poor woman from this horrible life. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. And yet at no point does she actually see Laurie as a person. Like,
with needs, even, with a life.
Yeah,
with
like when their first meeting is in a cafe and Laurie is there, like, under her pseudonym, Lily. And she has this, like, Paula has this, they have this whole conversation where Paula calls her a prostituted woman and Laurie's like, I don't call me that. That's not what I am. And I think maybe Laurie even, like, recoils at the term sex work as well. And she's like, just call me an escort. I'm an escort. And that does not, like, kind of stick with Paula whatsoever. Later on in the book, she gives someone a whole speech about how using the term sex work is normalizing it and prostituted woman is the correct term to use. Like, she completely disregarded Laurie's agency over that kind of terminology. And then she has these bizarre fantasies where she imagines her relationship with Laurie developing. She imagines her saving her and Laurie being incredibly grateful. And in these fantasies, she used this phrase, which it just turned my stomach. She's like, Paula is imagining saying to Lily, our lives are so different, but we see each other as women, don't we? Which immediately I was like, you don't fucking see her as a woman. You don't see her as a person with agency. You see her as a quote unquote prostituted woman that needs saving. And you see yourself in this light of glory for being the savior. It's just so gross and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
What did you think about the robot plotline?
I'm not super interested in robots in general.
Would you say that robots are on your list of turnoffs in terms of, you know, like, I have monks and Knights Templar. Is robots something for you that you would generally avoid?
Yeah.
What about Clara and the Sun?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, obviously, you know, only this year I read a book with a robot main character. But, yeah, I think in this... and obviously, I accepted Clara and the Sun because Katsuo Ishiguro is my favourite author. And with The Service, I feel like I could get over it because it's quite a... plot-wise, quite a minor part of the book in terms of, like, actually dealing with robots. But it's definitely there. Yeah, I thought it was...
So I actually really liked it. Okay, I felt like it opened up a wider point of discussion for the kind of hypocrisy within the kind of SWERF movement, that it's actually very Puritan, you know? That, like, ultimately these robots are not women, but Paula has more anger, more sympathy, more time for... Carmen, the fucking 9,000 quid robot that she keeps
in a trunk in her house,
in her attic. Yeah, she sees Carmen as more of, maybe victim is the wrong word, but actually from Paula's perspective it's the right word. She sees Carmen as much as a victim of men's, of patriarchy, and also of, like, men's objectification and lust as she does Laurie. I think it opens up an interesting space to kind of think about the kind of some of the nonsensical, like, lines of thought that exist in this kind of, like, sex worker exclusionary savior side of feminism. Like, you know, like, that it's the fact that, it is centering sex workers without including any sex workers. And, like, I feel like it's, like, personified in this robot, which is actually an inanimate object, but becomes... this massive, it's not just a symbol for Paula, it is the thing itself, which I thought was interesting. Like, it's an interesting way of highlighting that cognitive dissonance. Also, I think it was an interesting way of demonstrating that Paula is actually a fucking misogynist. Like, I think if you're literally kind of fist deep in this robot's fucking mouth, saying things like, I want to make you cry, I want to hurt you. Like, she does this bizarre role play, and she's a real fantasist, but... this bizarre role play where she starts really taking out her anger and aggression on Carmen. And Carmen is a robot. So Carmen is just like, I like it rough. You know, like, Carmen can't react in a normal way because she is programmed to just react in what this one specific way. I felt like it added a lot of value to the plot. I was here for it.
Yeah, and Carmen can't say to Paula, I am a person, I have a life, I have things I need to look after my child, I need to make money to fund my education, I need to do this, I need to do that. Like, Paula can just project everything that she feels and everything she fears about the sex industry onto this robot who will never tell her she's wrong.
Yes, yes, exactly. And then also it, like, I think it works as a good kind of vehicle to discuss, like, the removal of, like, punters, you know? Like, if you, the removal of demand. Because in this kind of utopian idea of, like, we no longer have human sex workers, we have these, like, automated robots, which isn't actually anywhere close to a reality in the novel. Like, the first like, automated brothel is opening in Soho. There's one in Hamburg. Like, we're a long way off imagining replacing sex workers, but it just touches upon this idea of automation that has affected other industries as well, you know, which is, like, this fear of, like, robots taking over our jobs. That need to make a living still exists. Like, if you remove the quote-unquote problem of sex work, you will still have all these people who need to pay rent, support their children, earn money. And I just felt like it was quite an original way to sort of touch
address
upon
that. Yeah, I agree.
So what did you think of Freya? Because Freya doesn't really interact with the dynamic between Paula and Laurie. Like, Freya and Laurie have more of a connection.
I found her chapters the least... I actually found hers the ones that I enjoyed reading the least, because I did find her a little bit annoying. But I felt like she was annoying in a way that I... It wasn't like I thought she was badly written. I thought she was well written, and she reminded me of people who are real, and they are annoying. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, and she kind of develops this fixation on Laurie and believes that she needs to, like, protect her from something. She has these kind of, like, visions of auras, and she's quite, like, woo and is into drugs. And, yeah, she thinks that Laurie is in some sort of danger and needs to be protected, which is true. But, yeah, I really liked the bit where they go to Amsterdam with the other sex worker and the client. I thought that was really a really excellent little moment in the book.
I really liked the writing style that Freya's chapters had. Because Freya's very woo, like, she also has PTSD, so dissociates a lot. And that kind of dissociation bleeds into her kind of, the way that she experiences reality through, like, this kind of very mystical gaze as well. Like, she doesn't recognize that she's dissociating that clearly. I mean, she will often consider her dissociation, her moments of dissociation, as out of body experiences, and that out of body experience links into her kind of her spirituality, not just her trauma. So yeah, I just, the scenes are written in a kind of slightly more surreal fashion, which I was very here for, even though Freya is also quite an irritating character. And she's kind of there to represent, I guess, like, the new face of sex work in some ways. Although I think the book does a really great job of showing the kind of smorgasbord of jobs which come under the sex work umbrella. And that some characters are very disparaging of, you know, people like cam girls and OnlyFans, that kind of thing, as being kind of lumped in with what they're doing, which is, like, full service in-person sex work. There's also, like, splits between people who are drug addicts and people who are not. There's a character towards the end of the book who is very happy to be on camera. She volunteers to be the spokesperson for the occupation. And her logic is, I just want to prove that, you know, I'm a high-end escort. I just want to prove that we're not all junkies and insane. And, you know, all the other women are like, fuck you, fuck off. There's some of us are addicts, and that's, you know, that doesn't mean that our needs aren't valid. So, like, there's this really great kind of depiction of the splintering of different people's kind of politics within, you know, sex work. And so Frey is there kind of representing this new face. She's younger. She's really privileged. Like, the things turn sour with a client, and he is surprised when she grabs the hotel phone. And she's like, we both know that I'm white, middle class, well-spoken. I can call the police and I'll be safe. And, like, it really highlights the difference in her position compared to Laurie and some of the other sex workers that we meet, that ultimately her privilege is, it will protect her.
Yeah, and the fact that, like, fundamentally it doesn't really matter, like, it doesn't matter if you're a sex worker saying stupid stuff in a press conference. It doesn't really matter if you're, like, from a wealthy family, or you're doing it because you need to survive, or you're, you know, a migrant woman or whatever, like, it would be a net benefit to everyone for sex work to be decriminalized.
Yes, that they, yeah, exactly.
There is actually no real benefit to, like, trying to stratify people by, like, it's fine for you to do it, but not for you to, you know, it's fine for you because you don't need to do it, but if you do it because you need to, then that's, like, dark and depressing, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I guess I think, like, it's just something that I thought was really interesting, is that because ultimately this is obviously a work of fiction, like, Frankie Mirren isn't trying to write revolting prostitutes, like, she is writing a novel. I still loved the way that the politics, the kind of politics within the sex work community, and the fact that there isn't one community, that it's this big splintered thing, and that people are coming to that with their own prejudices, you know, like, there's a lot of internalized stuff going on as well, and also, like, just outright racism, classism, that, you know, like, she's not presenting sex workers as this one kind of amorphous group with a shared goal. They have to, like any group that's organizing, they have to keep reminding themselves, like, we can't lose focus, we can't get distracted by inter-warring shit, like, we have to kind of remain focused,
unified. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. I just thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, I think that's really definitely one of the things that I think is so powerful about The Service, is that blending of, like, it is fiction, and it is a really, I think, impressive work of fiction, in that she writes really beautifully, and it blends that with very kind of quite clear and unambiguous sex worker politics around the benefits of decriminalization. I think it just does both of those things really, really well.
I'm going to read my favorite passage. Freya has these kinds of visions that kind of meander between her imagination and dissociation. I don't necessarily think she is literally psychic, but there is that kind of energy. And I just love this description of her thinking about Soho. Soho simmers around them, the ghosts. Long ago, Soho as fields and sky, as wheeling birds. Soho as houses for the aristocracy, as tightly packed slums, as 2 centuries of prostitution. Freya sees floor-length skirts and petticoats muddied from the street. She smells sweat and piss and cum. She hears women laughing and crying, the rumble of carriages, the muttered demands of men. She sees neon lights and 80s perms, hears the clack of heels, smells cigarette smoke and perfume. She sees cute boys in tight jeans who smile and wink and get on their knees. All of the ghosts are slipping away, and so too will they. I fucking love that so much.
Isn't that so good? I circled
the passage. It's just so incredible on a line level. You can really tell that Frankie has a background in journalism, because the whole book is written in with such confidence, right? You know, like, it's just so well written. But I just, there are these passages that are just completely stunning, I just feel like, you know, not all writers with a background in journalism necessarily flex those kind of artistic muscles in that way. And
yeah, there's no reason why a journalist would be a great fiction writer, but she really is. And I kind of can't believe that this is a debut, because it just feels so complete and deep, and yeah, I love it.
I'm really excited to see what Frankie Mirren writes next.
Me too.
I'm excited to see if she will continue writing specifically about sex workers and sex work in general, if she'll pivot to something nonfiction, if she will continue writing fiction, but, you know, with a completely fresh subject matter. I'm excited. Whatever she writes, I will read.
I'm also really, you know, grateful for Influx for publishing it, because I just feel like, you know, I would be interested to know how it came to Influx, whether it was submitted to, you know, trad publishers before it made it to Influx as an indie. And if it, like, I'm really interested to know if there would ever, or on what time scale, there would be a place for such a, like, radically empathetic to sex workers' portrayal of the sex industry in the 21st century. Like, not a historical book, not a nonfiction book, like a novel that examines the realities of being a sex worker in 2021 from a decriminalization perspective. Like, are we close to that being a thing that a traditional publisher would publish, or is it just so, you know, do we really exist in such a like bubble that we think that this is a reasonable demand, but the rest of the world is still like so kind of shocked and appalled by the idea that sex work exists that it's just not going to happen? I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right, because this book is completely radical, but also like it's not something that anyone in our bubble, I wouldn't expect anyone to be shocked by it.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's so like, normal, but I wonder like to what extent is it normal outside of that? I don't know.
But you are right though, like in terms of influx, like it's a very influx book. Influx aren't afraid to publish work that is politically exciting, that comes from marginalized writers in, you know, more ways than one. And yeah, I'm very grateful for it.
Agree.
Anyway, important question. Obviously, other books for people who loved The Service. I think Revolting Prostitutes is an obvious port of call.
Yes.
By Juno Mack and Molly Smith.
I feel like that's a very, you know, it's definitely a kind of non-fiction, fiction companion pieces to each other, in my opinion.
Is there anything else that you would recommend?
Not off the top of my head, TBQH. Yeah, I guess it just goes back to the fact that, like, it is quite radical in that way.
Yeah, I mean, a book that popped into my head would be Fierce Femmes and Notorious Liars, which I then discovered Frankie name checks in the back of the book. It's by Kai Cheng Tom. It's an American book written by a trans author, and it's really great. I recommend it. And there's another one which is also name checked in the back of the book, which I picked up when I was in New York, which feels like a lifetime ago now, called Prostitute's Laundry by Charlotte Shane.
Oh yeah, also... she's so cool. I would love to read that if you have it in physical copy.
Please. I have a physical. I will lend it to you. That's also nonfiction, I believe. I think that's memoir, maybe, I think. So yeah, there's like a couple more. But I'd love to know like what else there is.
Fiction-wise.
Specifically fiction-wise, but specifically own voices. You know, like, so written by sex workers rather than work that is imagined, so to speak, you know, by people who aren't working in the industry. There's, I like it because there's so many memoirs. Like, Diablo Cody wrote a memoir about her time as a, working as a stripper. And there's another one called, like, there's lots about stripping and, like, just dom stuff, like BDSM, that kind of thing. But yeah, nothing that's quite like so specifically full service sex work.
Yeah,
that feels like a bit slightly newer territory for fiction.
A boundary anyway. Yeah,
right. Anyway, well, that's all I have to say on that. I fucking loved it. I really
me too
you read it, and please, if you do read it, let us know, because we love hearing when our recommendations land, and also if it like triggers any thoughts in your heads of other books that we might enjoy if we like The Service. We are very keen to hear your recommendations.
Especially fiction. Fiction. Well, thank you so much for this chat, Alice. I will see you for our next episode.
I'll see you anon, my friend.
Bye.
Bye.